The Hard Shoulder on News Talk
with Nissan. Let's go the distance by keeping our distance. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
Not such great reading material are today's live register figures and exchequer returns. It's a great pleasure. Well known to any crisis would be incomplete without Professor John Fitzgerald, formerly of the ESRI, adjunct professor at University College Dublin, joins us because hot off the presses are the Q1 end of March figures and the March live register figures. Maybe, John, you could give us some of the headlines.
All right. They're driving me back to reading children's books, which have a happy ending. The unemployment figures that today are now at 18%, which is the highest they've ever been. And the exchequer figures show that in March, the government was already gearing up spending and revenue, in particular from VAT, was down. So there's no surprises in this. We knew that the crisis was upon us and it's going to have a big impact, and unemployment could well reach 25% by the end of this month. It is truly dramatic.
Well, now, let's be fair, because Friday only, the decision was taken to close construction sites, about 150,000 working in that. The last remnants of retail and service were closed. A lot of professional services were closed. So this can only go one way.
Yeah, I think by the end of this month, you're looking at 25%. Could be above that.
So that equates to a quarter, if about 2.5 million in the workforce. That equates to about 600,000 unemployed.
Yeah, it's 440,000. Like, it's one in every four people in at work is going to be out of work by the end of the month, hopefully temporarily.
Okay, now let's look at the tax side. Obviously, the shutters really came down circa 12th, the 15th, 16th of March, but the spending taxes, the VAT and excise, were already starting to show an impact.
Yeah, well, I think people saw crisis coming and they didn't spend. So already there was an impact before the complete clampdown. You see car sales down in February and so on. So, it's upon us now.
All right. One of the things you do as a macroeconomist is to try and draw the anecdotal and the latest figures into some sort of bigger picture. Now, we are in uncharted territory, but I see on the wires today an initial assessment by Pascal Donoghue that between equal figures of 8 billion on tax losses and extra spending, about 16 billion. Could you please put that in some sort of context? So say we were having this discussion this time next year and normality was resumed, and we'll come back to what normality might look like. How big a problem is 16 billion?
Well, I think it's going to be closer to 20 billion this year and probably another 10 billion next year before we're fully back on our feet. That's 30 billion. During the last crisis, we borrowed 120 billion, 75 billion to deal with day-to-day spending and 45 billion for the banks. So if we end up borrowing 30 billion, it's a quarter of what we had to borrow the last time. So providing the recovery happens next year and into 2022, yes, it would be a huge hit. But because of the good work done over the last decade in putting the economy in working order, it is not something that will have the impact that the last crisis had, where we were knocked out for a long period.
Well, the only thing I would differ on that is absolutely a good point. It's a quarter in terms of the fiscal gap, but we were dealing with a situation that in 2008, when disaster struck, the national debt was gone down to about 40 billion. Today it stands north of 200 billion.
Yeah, it is going to be a problem. And for the incoming government, they're not going to have the kind of resources to spend once this crisis is over, that they're going to be in a more of a straitjacket. But it is something, because of the last time round, the ECB to begin off with was not helpful from an Irish point of view, although when Draghi took over and said whatever it takes, he sorted it out. This time round, the central bank are the good guys. The ECB is the good guy, are a good woman in the in the room, although there are no central bankers who are women in the ECB, on the board of the ECB are very few. But the ECB have told the governments of Europe that they will basically buy their debt. So if we issue a load more debt on the market, the ECB will buy it.
And but hold on a second. What am I reading about that the Dutch and the Germans are saying, no, we're not going to have universal euro bonds. Is that different to the ECB?
Yes. The ECB is independent under its under the European Constitution, and it decides for itself what it's going to do. The Germans and Dutch mayn't like it, but that's what's going to happen. What's happening is an alternative way of funding this. Instead of the ECB basically at one remove funding governments, if Europe borrowed the money and then lent it to governments, which it would have certain advantages, but the Dutch don't have a diplomatic bone in their body, and they've come out and said very vociferously no, and in a rather, I think, unpleasant fashion. The Germans are a bit more diplomatic, so they don't want to do it, but the ECB are doing it, and that's it. Germans and Dutch may moan, but the ECB are going ahead.
Right. Now, one of the presumptions is, and I've heard economists say it repeatedly, when the public health crisis is over, we will see a V-shaped recovery, that the descent was sharp, it was steep, and the bounce back will be equally sharp because people will still need to socialise, have a meal out, buy a car, buy a home, and so on. What's your take on that? Because these are the same merchants who said we'd have a soft landing the last time.
Once the crisis happened, there weren't that many people who are saying we were going to have a soft landing. In fact, the opposite. This time around, I don't think it's going to be a V. I think it's going to be more a U. All right, maybe 3 months, 4 months, 5 months lockdown or whatever. We're not going to go back to completely normal until sometime next year, because until a vaccine is available, managing the virus is going to mean that there are going to be continuing restrictions. So, for example, in the tourism sector, you can forget this summer. You may also have major problems next summer, their air transport and so on, because people aren't going to commit ahead. It is likely, if we're all vaccinated against it by next summer, that then the crisis would be fully over. So I think certain sectors are going to face a much longer haul. Whereas if you think of the shops, there's three quarters of the population have their income is unaffected by this. They're at home. They can't spend it on pubs. They can't spend it in restaurants. They can't spend it on holidays. They're saving like mad. Now, some of that, and they're not buying clothes, a whole range of things, electrical goods. When the crisis is over, they will go out and spend some of that money. So that will help bring the recovery. Also, the government, and not just the Irish government. And the difference from the last time was the Germans, because they were very little affected, were not unhelpful. This time round, the Germans are going to be worse affected than we are economically, because the car industry is shut and is going to be shut for quite some time. So Germany and the governments of Europe next year, instead of raising taxes and saying we're going to have to borrow back or pay down the debt, I think there's going to be a period where Europe continues to pump money in next year to help the economy recover. So yes, I am hopeful that there will be a very significant recovery. I think it may take longer than we expect, and I think it could be 2022 before things are back to normal for areas like tourism.
Right. Let's talk about some of the potential new normals. I can see all around me changes taking place, some of which are only bringing to Europe what's already had in Asia, like more takeout food of an elaborate nature, like video conferencing, like online shopping, like living your life through apps, and so on, like the price of oil being $15 a barrel. In other words, what's your take on because, you know, don't waste a good crisis, things that you thought you couldn't do without. Suddenly a crisis fast forwards on evolutionary changes and people say, well, actually, I can do without that. What's your take on that? Is that overstated, understated, or have people even got their heads around it?
I think it's over. I think there would be a longer term impact in like video conferencing, that you don't have to travel as much. You can do things more from home. But I think that as one who is cocooned, I can't wait to get out and go for a walk. I can't wait to get out and meet friends and whatever. So I think that yes, people will make use of resources which require probably a slightly different working. But I think that people will want to get back to normal. Like, even if we're locked up for 6 months, we won't forget what it was like before. So I think there will be some changes, but I would not overemphasize them.
Right, I see. It's quite funny because we had a number of texts in relation to obviously your personal situation of cocooning. We had a report last night and a few texts came in. Margaret in Cork, I'm over 80. I'm supposed to be cocooned. That suggests to me that someone should be cleaning my house and giving me delicious meals. No one has turned up. Just saying, not losing her Cork sense of humour. Does the term cocooning come from the 1985 movie Cocoon? It was about elderly people who got a new lease of life, asked Paul. Do you know where this cocooning term comes from?
Me?
Yes.
Well, all I can tell you is I'm driven to washing my windows. I'm cocooning. I presume it comes, well, the cocoon is what silkworms grow around them.
See, any son of Garfield would be such a boffin into things like silkworms that they would have to know. So, finally, give us a note of optimism because, you know, in fairness now, whatever you are, John, you're not a snake oil salesman insofar as you're not selling any line, you're not selling any shares, you're not spinning politically, more state control, less state control. You're just calling it as you see it with the benefit of decades of economic analysis experience. Where do you think there are grounds to be optimistic other than it being a quarter of the fiscal cost of the last crash?
I think because the recovery, like the last crash, many firms went bust and the work of the government this time round, because it's shorter and sharper and the government are trying to keep them going. The last time all resources went into, or spare resources, or they weren't spare, went into keeping the banks going. This time round, the banks are the good guys. They're actually part of the solution, not part of the problem. And I think that the economy, if we can keep companies, and in particular small and medium-sized enterprise, intact, so that they can come out of this crisis, and as soon as somebody wants their services or their goods, they'll be up and running. So I would be hopeful, if properly managed, we will come out of this probably fully by 2022, probably not by 2021. Whereas I don't need to tell you that it began in 2008 and we weren't really fully back in working order until 2014.
And there was still legacy issues for banks and others. All right.
Oh, it's still there.
Yeah, absolutely. My thanks to Professor John Fitzgerald.
The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk
with Nissan. Together, let's play our part by staying apart. Nissan. Innovation that excites.